Attention, people of Earth, do not resist us. All who oppose us shall be annihilated. We command the most powerful army of monsters in the universe. They are sure to defeat your Earth monsters. All those who are hearing this are now under the control of the Earth Destruction Directive.
Hey, you! Yes, you, hearing this message. Do you like podcasts? Well, evidently you do, because you're listening to one right now. Do you like giant monsters? Of course you do! Who doesn't like giant monsters? Well, then have I got the show for you. Earth Destruction Directive is the newest Daikaiju podcast on the internet. And we talk about all your old favorites, like Godzilla, Rodan, King Ghidorah, and Gamera. But also lesser-known monsters, like Gappa, Yongari, and Giyawa. We cover everything from movies to comic books to video games, and we're kicking it old school.
This is breaking news. We are receiving word that Earth Destruction Directive is now a part of the Two True Freaks podcast network. Listeners are advised to stay in their homes and listen to all of the fine quality podcasts on the Two True Freaks podcast network, available at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. We now return you to your regularly scheduled broadcast. Wait a minute. Is this true? Earth Destruction Directive is now on the Two True Freaks Network? You bet your oxygen destroyer it is. So if you love atomic-powered, fire-breathing, hardcore, giant monster action, then head on over to twotruefreaks.libsyn.com and check out Earth Destruction Directive. We're turning all of your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
It's Christmas time again, suckers, and that's where me, Maury Clawhammer, comes in. I'm here to show you how you can get brownie points with the family and friends and ensure that you have quality podcasts to listen to when you're supposed to be working. So fellas, what you do is you go to the twotruefreaks.libsyn.com, spelled L-I-B-S-Y-N, and then you shop through the Two True Freaks Amazon link. That way you get presents for your old lady and kids, and the freaks get a little cut at no freaking cost to you. You get the stuff you want and ensure that fine DemonzaCorp podcasts like this one don't have to steal from peaceful citizens just to put food in their yaps. Got it? And ladies, oh come on, let's face it, there's no ladies listening to this sausage fest. And while you're at it, why don't you buy a t-shirt? They're made out of cotton, not dog crap. Jeez, whatever. Merry Christmas.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Merry Creepmas and gruel tide tidings, fellow freaks! It's your old pal, the Chris Keeper, here. And this year, Christmas is coming in on clawed feet, with slimy skin and pointy teeth! Yes, it's the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror Gremlins special. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going out caroling. I'm working up a new one. God rest ye in peace, merry gentlemen!
Hello and welcome to a special holiday Christmas edition of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am Terror. Chris Honeywell, and this is going to be a little weird one. This was going to be for right around Christmas time, but this might be a little late for Christmas because there's been an explosion at DemonzaCorp headquarters, and there's some technical difficulties. But we'll get you this one before New Year's. And this is, and I'm also joined here by the usual crew of miscreants. I've got Mr. Chris Tyler.
Hey, I've heard that the break-in was due to the molester bot. I can neither confirm nor deny it, though.
I will not. I will confirm that it was a molester bot, but I will not go into details of what the molester bot did to my computer. So, don't want to know.
It was left with a white screen.
Yeah,
right?
I took video, and it might show up on ogreish.com. That's what we're talking.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. And speaking of ogreish.com, we've got Mr. Luke Giaconetti here.
Hey, and you know what I've heard is that the molester bot was revived through the use of Cobra technology. So I don't know. Maybe Cobra Commander had something to do with that. I don't know. He's been awfully quiet.
Yeah, well, he's off smoking a cigarette somewhere.
I know what he does, yeah.
And in a rare appearance not from work, we've got Sean Engel.
Yeah, well, my work was pretty much destroyed by these really weird green people. I don't know what the heck was going on. It burned the place to the ground. I don't understand it.
So as Sean is hinting at, this is our Christmas episode, Gremlins. How many Christmas movies? Actually, there's quite a few Christmas movies that could qualify for the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. But Sean, I think this was your idea, actually. It was a great idea.
Well, it is surprisingly a really good Christmas movie, and surprisingly a really good horror movie as well. I mean, a lot of people overlook this thing, and you make a few minor changes in the movie, especially like soundtrack wise, and this thing is one of the scariest. This mm-hmm. thing is right up there with like Aliens mm-hmm. and the sort of horror terror films.
Well, and you know what's also funny about Gremlins, insofar as you could go the other way as well. You make a couple of changes, and this is this is no longer a horror film. It's just kind of a wholesome, Christmassy comedy movie also.
Mm-hmm. So
it straddles, this is the film that kind of, is the evidence that Joe Dante is an evil
genius. He's a bastard, so. Yeah. He's like, I look at him as the evil version of Bob Zemeckis,
yes.
Bob Zemeckis also does this, but he sort of does Bob Zemeckis movie. Bob Zemeckis always has that good, wholesome, all-American feel to his movies, and Joe Dante does too. But then something goes just horribly, horribly wrong. Almost, I mean, I didn't think this movie was going to be that good. When it came out, but the only reason I saw it is because I love the Joe Dante segment of the Twilight Zone movie, Twilight Zone the movie that he did. I thought that was
that was the one where they put him into the cornfield, the kid with the psychic powers. Am I thinking
right? But the cornfield was in the TV show, but the kid would just it would screw with them. But it was basically a Warner Brothers cartoon come to life. Mm-hmm. You had practical effects that were doing the Tasmanian devil effect and spin and stuff like that. And, it was a little kid's id come to life.
That was the update of It's a Good
mm-hmm.
Life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The great thing, like I said, and it's not surprising when you look at the credits and you see one of the producers is Steven Spielberg. Or that it's written by Chris Columbus. Again, you look at that. Let's say that your Joe Blogs on the street, and you're not familiar with the earlier work of Joe Dante. Okay, you see a movie set at Christmas time. The poster's got a fuzzy, cute little monster of some kind on it that's in a shoebox, so you know it's small. It's written by Chris Columbus, produced by Steven Spielberg, starring Phoebe Cates. What are you expecting to get, and what you actually get?
Well, was this movie PG-13? If it wasn't, it was in those days when PG-13 was first emerging, and
it was not. This and Gremlins and Temple of Doom are the reason that they created the PG-13.
Right, because
it was a couple of months after this, because this and Temple of Doom came out, and then I think it was like two, 3 months later that we got PG-13.
Yeah, I can see that. Totally see that.
Yeah. Yeah, this one definitely pushes the limit of PG. I mean, there are some things in there that I don't know if you could get away with in an R-rated movie. Well, you could get away with an R-rated movie, but there's, especially the mom, the scene in the kitchen with the gremlins, she is a stone-cold killer. Yeah. She's got two knives, and she's ready to stab the fuck out of some of those
things.
She's
got a microwave and a blender, too.
And she knows how to use them.
Oh.
And you know, but again, it's a gruesome scene. It's also hilarious at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a credit to Joe Dante being able to pull that off, being able to pull off, you know, horrific and funny in almost the same scene.
And you know, the part in there, I don't know why this cracked me up so bad, but I had to, now I'm showing my ages. I have both this and Gremlins 2 on VHS. I had to actually stop my tape because I was laughing so hard. After she kills the one in the blender, and she stabs the other one, then she kills the other one in the microwave. When she sees Stripe running out into the living room, she grabs the knife, then she stops and grabs the other knife.
Yes. Yeah, she's not screwing around.
Yeah, it's surprising. You don't see that too much in the thriller. You know.
Well, you know, from to make it even more horrific, from one of the things I heard they were supposed to do in the movie, rather than have you know, the mom go and get attacked by Stripe and then Billy come in and save them, was that Billy was supposed to come in after Stripe had killed his mom, and what he comes in is to his mom's head rolling down the stairs. So
I kind of want to see that version.
Think about it. This movie could have been, you know, as terrifying and funny as it is, this movie could have been even more horrific if they had gone their way. And I think Spielberg sort of kind of put the kibosh in that, because
he definitely did. Well, yeah, according to the commentary, he's like, got to lighten it up. Well,
one of you and I were having a conversation in the last week or so about the scene with the science teacher. You know, where, you know, I mean, they out the gremlin flat out murders that science teacher.
Yeah,
that was you. And you know, you see the science teacher laying there. You can't see his hand or his face, but you see that needle sticking out of his ass. And you were saying there were supposed to be like 200 needles stuck in him. Or
face up. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be face up and punctured.
Yeah. He was supposed to be basically, you know, the hypodermic needle version of Pinhead, from what I've heard. So
wow.
But I think the you know, having the Spielberg there to rein him in, I think helps. I think if put too much, you know, over the top kind of graphic 80s style violence like that, it's going to take away from some of the parts that are funny, because, you know, it always makes me think of you know, Miriam C. Cooper talking about the spider scene in the original King Kong. And he says that he cut it out because after that was all the audience would talk about anymore. They weren't paying attention to the story. And I think if you put in, you know, Billy's mom, her head rolling down the steps, that's going to, you know, that's going to overwhelm things that are going to come after it.
Then you really can't laugh at the gremlin who's dressed up like a pervert with the sunglasses and the trench coat on.
And this was some really good use of puppetry and practical effects. I mean, the number of gremlins that they had, especially in the movie theater, and the number of puppets, and the fact that all of them, although there were probably a lot of them, you know, in the generic ones that are pretty much basic same molds, they all had distinct personalities, and they really came across doing it well. And I would hate to see this movie get remade now, because they would just CGI it up, and I don't think it would work as well.
No, it wouldn't. Even though he was definitely, you could tell he just wants to make a cartoon. The soundtrack is somewhere between a regular soundtrack and a cartoon soundtrack. You know, I mean, there's so many cartoon references and cartoony shots of the gremlins and Gizmo and everything.
Having a plow through a building, or launching,
launching this deagle out of the out of the house on the little remote electric
chair. My favorite part of that is just when you can hear them in the background going, deagle, 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 deagle. They're just ruthless. They're just ruthless, and they're so joyful about destroying
everything. You know
what, though?
At that point in the movie, you're joyful about that old biddy getting
They set her up for payback, you know, big time, you know. And it's fun. A lot of the people also, they do a lot of the false stuff where they, you know, you don't want to see Dick Miller get run over by his own tractor.
No.
You know, but they set it up as if he did, you know, oh, there was a freak accident out at, you know, at his house and stuff. But, you know, then later on you find out, okay, he's all right and stuff. It's really mostly only the people who did something. You know, the science teacher didn't really have it coming, but in the gremlin's eyes, he definitely had it coming.
Oh, no, he had it coming. He asked the kids to give him Christmas presents.
That's true.
And that, and then the dirty fucker only broke off a tiny little piece of that Snickers for him.
That's true.
You can't dangle a Snickers out in front of a hungry animal and not expect to get your arm chewed off.
Wait, that's me.
The point that Sean made earlier is well met. The use of the practical effects in this film, especially the different types of puppetry, both the cable and wire-driven puppets in the long shots, and then the more hand-driven puppets in the close-ups, that's what sells this film. From the first time that we see him, Gizmo is 100% realized. He is a fully living, breathing character. And if that doesn't work, and let's say that effect just isn't convincing, the whole movie falls apart.
Yeah.
You know, he is. We forget that he's an effect. He's a little guy.
Well, his facial expressions are priceless, and they change. In the close-ups they change, and you know they'll have him pouting and smiling, or just when he's reading, just the look on his face when he's reading the 3D comic book with the glasses is priceless. And they could do that with CG, but it would be just like, there's CG, you know.
And having Howie Mandel do his the voice he brings.
Is that Howie Mandel? God damn it! I hate Howie Mandel.
Yeah, the all the gremlins are all Howie Mandel, Peter Cullen, Frank Welker. It's all voice actors.
And almost all the lines are ad lib.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all the lines are ad lib. So like when the gremlins are going crazy in the bar, all their lines and everything and all their little gags are all basically ad libbed by the performers, which is another reason why it's so funny.
Well, and supposedly, even in versions that they released in other countries, like in European versions or in Japanese versions, they'd get Howie Mandel to redub the things with lines that were similar to the dubbed lines that they had over there. So it wasn't just Howie Mandel going neat or, you know, Mogwai over there. He was actually mimicking the vocalizations of the words that they were saying in the Japanese movies as well, or the Asian movies. So I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, they got a lot of big name voice actors and Howie Mandel to do the gremlins. So it was fun.
It's hilarious. For some reason, again, it's great, you know?
This is one of those movies that every time I see it, it just amazes me at how many, you know, classic, how wonderfully realized this movie is. And I think it like peaks. There's this peak in it when they're in the movie theater and the movie starts up and they're all going crazy. And it automatically just makes you think of an audience full of little kids. You know, little kids, blah, 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 blah. The movie starts and they're just like, bing. And then once a song starts, they're just like, and then outside you see the Mogwai's in the backpack and the Mogwai hears it and the Mogwai's like, you know, something about this critter, they can't resist song and dance routines and stuff. It's just without a single word, that's all communicated just through that scene. And it's one of the most magical, hilarious scenes ever. I love it.
And hat tip to Scott Gardner and Disney. What's the movie that they have to be watching?
Oh, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yep.
which becomes a great callback in Gremlins 2 when they do the where the gremlins break into the theater and interrupt the film. What is the movie that they want to see? The projector says all they want to do is watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
man. Yeah, this is full of some great stuff. That, you know, you get to see the Star Wars, the original Star Wars video game at one point. It's just like this this perfect storm of classic 80-ness is you got Judge Reinhold playing a prick.
Dick. Yeah,
basically the same, just the worst version of himself in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. You got Phoebe Cates, although she's not naked,
yeah.
There's no boobs.
Doesn't matter, she's still
But she's
hot.
Still Phoebe Cates, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, opposite there because it's Phoebe Cates playing the good girl.
I know,
of
instead of the worldly whore.
I don't care either way. Doesn't
and
matter.
And it's even got Corey Feldman when he was an appealing actor when he was just a kid.
It's a wee boy.
Oh,
he's definitely hooked up by a crank. That's back when he was getting passed around. You've heard the stories,
no,
right?
No, I haven't, but I believe it.
Oh man, he was like cigarettes in jail.
Like, wow. All I gotta say is I am always I love character actors. I think we all do on this, and this movie
Dick
has
Miller.
Dick Miller and
yes.
got Dick Miller and Key Luke. Okay,
oh,
and
yeah.
my favorite character actors in the same movie only happens
now,
twice.
Now is he the gas only station this... attendant?
No, he's the
grandpa. He's the grandfather at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mogwai, not for
that
sale.
Was Hoyt Axton. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, oh, Hoyt Axton. Well, he's just a ridiculous, sad character with his goofy adventures, but he was perfect for the part.
Nope, perfect. Yes, exactly.
Hey, he got to go to a convention with Robbie the Robot in the time.
And an actual quote from the movie where you hear Robbie in the background going, "I was just giving myself an oil job."
Now, I don't know this for a fact, but I was watching the movie at the electronic convention that Hoyt Axton was going by, and I would put money on the fact that Steven Spielberg made an unscripted cameo driving
yes.
little sort of tricycle.
That is,
Steven
Spielberg's in there, and somebody else is in there too. I can't remember.
I've heard Chuck Jones.
Chuck Jones is at the bar talking to Billy.
Okay.
Smith is the man.
He's the one he's showing his drawings to.
Who's that? And who's that in the phone booth?
Jerry Goldsmith, the composer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and you got the H.G. Wells time machine in the background, and
yeah.
Oh, and I love the scene that they have after that. That you know, 1 second there's there, they cut away
it's
to
gone.
There's smoke, and everybody's running around.
Yeah. It's hilarious, and. Again, you know, I don't know whether you want to attribute that to Chris Columbus's writing or to Joe Dante's directing, but that is genius. Absolute genius.
Well, it was awesome, you know. I mean, as a kid, well, I was a huge Forbidden Planet Robbie the Robot fan. So just seeing, like, the real Robbie the Robot, not the, like, Lost in Space one that you usually would see, or what, it was just... that made my day. And then seeing the time machine back there, it was just like, oh, I see what kind of movie... This is going to be. Well, I'm a big fan of Hoyt Axton to start out with, so seeing Hoyt Axton in a movie is just like having Burl Ives in a movie. Burl Ives was another character, great character actor, singer, you know, style. Like Andy Griffith, you know, they're all cut from that same bit, you know, they're old country boys, but they don't have that. They're not hayseeds, you know, they're not dumb hicks. They're worldly and patient, like the kindly sort of shop owner kind of country guys. And to put that into the sort of, you know, bumbling inventor mold, it was just perfect because he was kind of, he's really the one who's, you know, responsible for the destruction of his whole town.
Well, none of his shit worked.
Yeah,
anyway.
But that's his life. His life is just sowing destruction by trying to do be you know do things to help people, you know, and destroying everything. And yet at the same time, you just can't not like him. You know, you just, even when they you know when he comes back to collect the Mogwai and he's kind of pissed off, he just, you know he can't stay mad at these guys.
Yeah.
Well, he also. You know, Rand has what I think is one of the most telling pieces of dialogue. He says it a couple of times in his little spiel when he's talking, introduces himself and gives his business card. He says the illogical logical.
Yes.
That's kind of a telling little statement for Gremlins, isn't it? This is a very illogical movie in certain ways that works really well. So it is the illogical made logical.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, they did a really good job at setting up all their rules, you know, setting up all the rules for this universe.
Well, that's debatable, but.
Well, no, it's a very simple concept.
If you do this to the Mogwai, this happens, and if you do this, this happens, and once this happens, all hell breaks loose, and that's basically all you need, really, for the whole movie.
It is one of those things that will get, you know, nerds like us going crazy, which led to the scene in the second movie. Well, what if, you know, you're flying in an airplane and you feed him and you pass the dateline and it turns to midnight? What happens? You know, what if he's got a piece of food stuck in his teeth and he swallows it after midnight? Then what happens? You know, it's very simple rules. You know, don't get him, don't expose him to light, don't get him wet, don't feed him after midnight. Pretty simple, but, you know, obviously it doesn't work out as simply as that. And it's a tale on, you know, sort of the loss of responsibility that, you know, people seem to have in the 1980s.
If you don't watch out and you don't play things right, everything goes downhill real fast, you know. And and you know, I mean, it's so ridiculously set up that way, you know. I mean, from the point of where his town is basically you know, the town from It's a Wonderful Life, you know, or what was it, like Grover's Mills or something like that? Or
to be honest, the town, it was Hill Valley. It was eventually, the entire town was eventually repurposed and used as Hill Valley for the Back to the Future movies. Mm-hmm. Exactly the same town. If you look at the scene where they're going up the street to the theater, it is exactly the same as the street to the theater that they crashed the DeLorean in at the end of you know, Back to the Future, the first one. So
yeah.
And I love what's playing at the theater. It's A Boy's Life and Watch the Stars.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what's also, it's interesting because there is a lot of kind of metatextual reference to film. Talking about the time machine and Robbie the Robot. And of course, we see a couple of clips from It's a Wonderful Life. And I think it's telling. The scene from It's a Wonderful Life is after George has his vision and then he's brought back to, he comes back to the real world and he's running through Bedford Falls. And what's one of the lines we get? He goes, "Merry Christmas, old movie house." So, I kind of reference to the concept of film, and it's just a very self-aware sort of film, you know?
I think Steven Spielberg sort of brought into the whole film language the talking TV, where there's a TV on and every, you know, like in every house there'd be a TV on, and then Spielberg was the one who was like, what am I going to put on that TV, you know? I want to put something on there that is either a, you know, something I like or somehow references what's going on. And so there was a lot of that. I mean, this movie is filled with it. I love, you know, and it's nothing is left untouched, you know, when you have the big earlier on in the movie when Gizmo's watching the Errol Flynn racing movie, where from one of Errol Flynn's obviously later movies where he would cast himself with like 20-year-old girls when he was 70 or whatever. But, you know, and it all comes back in the department store with Gizmo and it's almost like a reference. It's almost seems like it's in joke with maybe Joe Dante and stuff. You know, the whole when Gizmo gets a car and he starts hearing Errol Flynn's dialogue in his head and everything like that. It's hilarious. I don't know why exactly it's hilarious. I'll bet you to Joe Dante and Chris Columbus, it's probably even more hilarious because it's probably some joke of some movie that they really like or something. But
it was going to be a Daffy Duck cartoon. Where he was driving. I can't remember what it was.
I mean,
that's what it is. And in some of the long shots you can, during that scene, you can see that he's watching the cartoon. They didn't fix it.
Oh, but there were probably legal reasons for not.
I don't know. It's Warner Brothers. I don't know. They just must have went with something else. I don't know. But it's just the setup that he's going to drive at the end.
And, you know,
that's all it is.
I mean, the entire film is in certain ways just making, you know, like you said, it's something that must have been and in a sense was funny to Chris Columbus and Joe Dante, the bit where Kate talks about her dad dying at Christmas.
Oh, Jesus. And it just comes from out of left field. It's just like this massive drama bomb that goes off in the middle of the movie.
It's the creepiest part of the whole movie, and it doesn't have a single... It just has Gizmo in it. It has none of the monsters in it.
But and you don't know whether you're supposed to laugh or not, also.
I know. It's like your dad was that fucking stupid to climb down the chimney. Really?
And and Phoebe's delivery on that is just so straight. And I mean, I don't know how she kept a straight face doing it. I mean, I really don't. Because even though it's this horrific story, it's just, it's the quintessential 1950s sick joke.
Yeah. And that's actually, I think Phoebe Cates's, probably because she didn't have a lot of opportunities, but it was probably her greatest acting moment ever in her whole career. I don't know what ever happened to her. Did she end up growing up to be weird looking or something? Or
no, she's still hot and she's banging Kevin Kline.
But she's not doing movies or anything anymore?
I don't think she's done anything for a while. I'm pretty sure she's still married to Kevin Kline. So good for him.
Yeah, Jesus.
No, she's still really pretty.
I would think also, so.
Also, I have to say, I do love the reference to that bit in Gremlins 2.
Oh, yeah, they tell her to shut up. No one cares.
Well, you know, not to go off on, you know, since we're talking about Gremlins, and we'll probably do Gremlins 2 another time, but didn't she say something about something happening to a family member on, like,
it was
Arbor
like,
Day?
Yeah, it was
something?
Like, and then there was Arbor Day.
I thought it was President's Day, but yeah, and they basically just cut where she can go on and start.
Oh, God.
And the thing that's also, I watched this movie a lot as a kid. This was one of the scary movies that my dad would let my brother and I watch. After all, it was PG, right? So
it couldn't be scary, no.
But, you know, something that I didn't really pay much attention to until I got older is that, you know, the gremlins, the gremlins of legend from World War II, you know, they were the things that would screw up airplanes and ships and mechanical systems, you know? That's all they do here.
Yeah. You know,
they cut the brake line on the car. They short circuit the lift chair. They do stuff like that. They hot wire the plow. So they're doing the exact stuff they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. They're
shooting people, which is hilarious when he shoots the guy when they're playing poker.
Yeah. Until Stripe grabs a chainsaw and goes after Billy.
But yeah, they are just basically, you know, messing with people. They're not bloodthirsty killers. They're just, well, they are bloodthirsty killers, but they're bloodthirsty killers in a sort of abstract way. They're causing normal things to malfunction, which is in turn causing people to die. So they're sort of the secondary cause of it.
And, that's what took down our boys in WW2.
Oh, Dick Miller, I love you. You're just so amazing.
Well, Dick Miller, and I don't know the guy's name, but he was always in old cowboy movies and stuff. The guy who plays the gas station attendant who gets the Peltzer, smokeless ashtray.
Smokeless ashtray. So I see there you're
that guy. Yep. Guy's face is just like carved out of rock. It's just that class. His eyes are just two little lines that are like mashed shut. It's just beautiful. I love character actors. And
oh, you know, you can't. It's watching the movies we watch on this show. How can you not love character actors? I was watching a movie the other day with my wife, and Hector Elizondo showed up, and I said, "Of course it's Hector Elizondo. Of course it is." And shock, it was a film directed by Gary Marshall. So,
Gremlins. I wouldn't have been surprised if Borgnine showed up at some point. You know, Borgnine would have been great in a Gremlins movie.
Borgnine would have been. He would have been Dick Miller's war buddy. You know. Down at the VFW.
Yeah, like at the VFW with Dick Miller, Borgnine, and like, what the hell is his name? CPO Sharkey, the comedian, Don Rickles, all sitting together down at the. That would have been too much for me.
That would have been great.
It's like, full stop, we're done. Yeah, can't do better than that.
Oh man.
And but again, it's, you know, we've talked about this on other things, but I think one of the real testament to this film's quality and its staying power, and we're talking a film that's going on 30 years old,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it? And we talked about this when we talked about Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Is that the scary parts are scary and the funny parts are funny?
Yeah.
And it can switch back and forth in the same scene, from going to be something really amusing to something, you know, that's monsters tearing people apart. And a good example of this to me is in when they're in the movie theater, as we were talking about earlier, when, you know, when they're watching the movie, that's funny. And then, you know, they go and they set up they rig the boiler to explode, and then they're running behind the screen, and then they don't make the real change, and then the gremlins can see them behind the screen, and then they're all on the screen, and we see them, you know, the whole mass of them rising towards the screen goes from, you know, laughing at them, their hijinks in the theater, to, okay, now we're being chased down by an army of gremlins. That's in within the span of a minute.
What I love about that scene is that's an old school, like, animated scene of their reflection, yeah, of their shadows on the screen. And it looks like it, but it looks great. Especially coming, yeah, right after, you know, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. And there's also the shot, the claymation shot, you know, the stop motion.
When they're walking, yeah, down,
yeah,
the street. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfect, you know, Harryhausen type stuff. I mean,
it's just a few seconds of it, but it's just like, yeah, some claymation, you know, and to see that CGI would just ruin the charm of that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, you know, CGI is nice in some aspects, but for what it is, you know, practical effects will always, in my opinion, will always outdo CGI. The eye will always be able to, yeah, tell, you know, when something's not there.
Yeah. I think eventually they will get CGI to the point where you won't be able to tell. Where they'll get enough subroutines to get all to where basically it's just building a virtual whatever it is, like, literally, you know, it'll build it with, it's doing that to an extent, but the more they can do it in more detail, just like digital could eventually replace film grain by just getting to the level of, you know, dots per square inch and then making it look like film grain. But it's just a matter of the technology hitting there. But I, you know, like this movie, if it was done today and they did all the practical effects, they could have used a little bit of CGI just to clean up a few wiggly wonky things. Like, the only time that Gizmo really took me out of Gizmo-ness was where he's crawling across the floor and he sort of looked like a wind-up, yeah, Gizmo that they dropped down on the ground and sort of went across the floor. But that was kind of cute in its own way, too. And, you know, maybe I would have CGI'd that a little to have his feet scrambling or something like that, you know, but yeah, you know, it was like when Forrest Gump was a beautiful use of that in the beginning, because they didn't do it to, you know, they did it because they're like, well, we have a character who has to have one leg, you know, so we'll take his leg out. So you don't really, you're not looking for it. The eye doesn't see it.
It's also not beating you over the head with it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to say because, you know, to me, one of the best uses of CGI, and this stays on the Spielberg kick, which still holds up today, is Jurassic Park. And Jurassic Park was 1993, so it wasn't exactly, not a cutting, right, edge film.
Well, it's not cutting edge now, it was then, but
not exactly. It was extremely cutting edge then, but not cutting edge now. But the CG in that holds up a lot better than some of the modernists that we're getting that use beat you over the head with the CG, because they were subtle about it and they didn't only use the CG. There was physical effects and CG effects oftentimes in the same scene. So that, and you know, ILM was, I mean, they were going over that, you know, not only by frame, but lower than that to make sure that things looked right, had texture and mass.
Right.
Where a lot of it's like, oh, just sub that out to some house and they'll do it.
Also, you know? Spielberg was smart enough to know that sometimes when you do CGI and you have your CGI monster run by, you know, like nowadays you could have you could use it like a stable camera shot and you see the monster just clearly coming towards you. Whereas if you did it before, if you did it like they do in Jurassic Park 2 and Jurassic Park 1, where, you know, a dinosaur will run by or something, but they'll film it as if they were filming something real. So you'll just see a flash of it and the movement or a part of it and stuff like that. So that leaves a lot. The more you leave to someone's brain and eyes to put it together, to put the whole thing together, the more realistic it's going to be. I'm in the middle of reading the new Walking Dead novel, and I'm enjoying it like 10 times more than the first Walking Dead novel, although I think the first one was a better book because I'm reading it as a book instead of listening to an audiobook. So 100%, my brain is 100% putting the picture together, whereas the audiobook was putting voice, you know, the tone of voices into people and stuff like that. And it's the same, the same with this movie. And like Gremlins is brilliant about just showing you just little things that set off things, you know, to make the whole thing fall into place. Little just a movement or a look on one of the puppets' faces, and it all comes together without having to be. They sort of look like puppets. But they're like these super mega puppets that have facial expressions and stuff. So you're seeing them as puppets, but there's that realism to them. So you just sort of take that as the gremlin reality, and which should be the gremlin reality. They're you know, they're not of you know, they're supernatural. They pop out of the back of their, you know, when you add water and they come out intelligent. You know, it's perfect. and those whole sequence where they spill water on Gizmo for the first time, you know, and he reproduces. Oh, it's terrifying, especially it's mm-hmm. you know, and Billy's got that look on his face of like, I made a new friend and now I'm torturing and killing him. And Corey Feldman's just sort of like, he's more of the short attention span kid who's like, whoa. And then there's some new babies. And then within two minutes after the new Mogwais, or, you know, the new Mogwais have been birthed or created, he's back to reading the 3D comic. I'm like, yeah. I love that. That's totally like a real kid. You know, for me, I'd think, I would be like so fascinated by this and be like, no, not really. Not with that 3D comic sitting there.
One thing I wanted to ask you guys, did any of you read the novel about Gremlins?
Yes, but like 30 years ago. I have it sitting here right next
same
to
here.
Me. But I remember it same had a because... lot of stuff from like their points of view, from Gizmo's point of view, from Stripe's point of view especially.
Yeah, they made it out that the Mogwai were actually a lot more intelligent than, you know, what was put forth. I mean, they come off intelligent in the movie, but in the book they had sort of a backstory. I think they were actually aliens from another world where they had this. I mean, it wasn't necessary to the plot, but it gave the characters a little bit more, give you a little bit more insight into the characters, especially the Mogwai, and the fact that it made them. It didn't make them like, you know, space traveling, you know, hunters of each other, but they did sort of.
If I remember, it was just sort of a passing reference, you know, of like, you know, on their former planet or something like that. And it reminded me a lot of the E.T. novelization by Kotzwinkel that was from E.T.'s point of view, basically.
Yeah.
But I remember the book being light and fun, like the movie, being very, very fun to read. It was well written. It was better written than a lot of the other adaptations.
I have not read that one. I have read the novelization of Gremlins 2, which is
Lord,
it's a hoot and a half. But no, and I know I see it because I think my brother had the novelization of Gremlins, but I've never read it. Interestingly. just talking about the novelization, of course, the cover of the novelization was the one sheet where we see the little box with Gizmo peeking out. You just see his eyes peering out of the box. What was real interesting to me is that on my VHS tape, and I think when Gremlins was re-released at some point, they actually changed the poster so that it was the traditional poster, but Stripe was tearing through the poster, and he had written "We're back" or something in red marker on the poster, making it like he had defaced the poster at the movie theater.
Yes.
Kind of thing. So it's like that. It kind of takes away some of the surprise, but I guess if it's a re-release or a VHS release, we
by
all
that
know
time,
the joke.
Yeah, by that time, you know, yeah, the surprise is out of the bag. The gremlin's out of the Mogwai's back.
Yeah. and again, something else I also absolutely love. I love the song Mega Madness that the gremlins dance to in the bar.
Break dance to. Yeah.
To the more perfectly 80s song than Mega Madness from Gremlins.
Yeah, every 80s song had the same guitar electronic drum thing, like bass to it. Good. The guitar is good. And the drum does it. Because that was the easy music to get copyright free, you know, in those days. That was what would get churned out to be like, we want something modern, you know, something that sounds like they would be listening to a modern pop song, but it's not, you know.
I'm certain every Casio keyboard that was sold during the 80s had that soundtrack programmed in. You hit one button and it was gone. Like,
yeah,
that.
And it was probably the same studio guitar player who was really like a heavy metal dude, you know, but...
It's day job,
yeah,
you know.
Basically just toned down the guitar part for Rockin' Into the Danger Zone. And
yeah.
Put some synths over it and you're good to go.
That bass seat is... That's just amazing. Just seeing the different personalities of all the gremlins.
I think that bar scene gives the bar scene in Star Wars a serious run for its money of sheer just like
lunacy,
fun, a sequence just for the sheer fun of it, just for the sheer comedy and film fun of it. There's nothing in there that's realistic at all or believable, and it's masterful the way that they're just all, you know, they're leaving her alone for the most part because she's serving them up beer.
I love that she continues to serve them.
If she doesn't serve them, they're probably gonna start throwing knives and axes at her and stuff,
or shoot her.
Exactly.
That just makes it all the funnier. It's like, well.
Oh, she's lighting the cigarettes. She's doing everything. It's amazing.
Three cigarettes at once. Yeah, well, it's just because it's her work. That's her job, but her job has just been transformed into a cartoonish hell, a hellish version of what a real bar is. With, you know, her bar used to be just like, walk old Mr. Futterman home, and now it's like, oh my God, there's just so many awesome... Is it in the bar where there's actually a puppet putting on a puppet show?
Yes.
Yes.
And not only that, but the reality of like, okay, you have these puppets who are just like a mockery of like humanity. They're just like blah, 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 blah. But when they have puppets, it's even one thing further where it's
and the look on the face of the gremlin that's watching the puppet show is just like, it's of that of just impatient annoyance.
A little bit of contempt thrown in there.
Yes. Oh, good Lord. It's perfect. It is so... It's such a wonderful movie. Holy cow.
A lot of that was ad-libbed. I mean, the part I always love are the three gremlins who are bobbing back and forth singing their drinking song.
Mm-hmm. But they're supposed to be Irish, too, and one of them's got like a hockey mask on, like he's a member of the NRA or something, you know.
Right, the Flasher is classic.
The Flash is my favorite one. And then maybe the Breakdancer one.
But what's funny, when NECA, the toy company, when they started doing their Gremlins line, which is a very cool line, my dad has, I think, every single one of them. And I was just up at my parents' house a couple weeks ago, and I got to see them. And he has them all on display, and they just look fantastic. The first Gremlin that they made from Gremlins was the Flasher.
Before Gizmo and Stripe.
They made Gizmo, the first Gremlin, not Mogwai. I think was they made Flasher before they made Stripe, or they were in the same wave or something. But it's like right there, you know, memorable Gremlins.
It's just so memorable because she's just like she's hanging on for dear life, and then all of a sudden he's just gonna come out of the corner and go.
Well, Chris, you've done substitute teaching, right? That's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of elementary school, and we'd have a substitute teacher. It was just like, get him.
Yeah, well, teacher flashes now. He's going to jail for a long time.
Inventing ways of being annoying. Yeah, I've got a plush Mogwai, and I've got a ceramic Mogwai that I got at a rummage sale that somebody painted and fired at some point. That's sitting down on our toaster oven. It used to be in my roommate's vintage clothing store with a sign that said Mogwai not for sale.
Really?
Mogwai not for sale. That's what she used to tell everybody too. She used to sort of sit behind. All she needed was one of those long, twisted pipes.
Yes.
Opium pipes.
Well, and you know what's funny with Key Luke in that is that I think he was like 70 or so, and they still had to put him in old age makeup. He had preserved so well at that point, they had to make him old looking for that. Well,
that's just a great look. He's got the Fu Manchu and
the dead eye is just the greatest.
That's the one thing.
It's like, that guy's seen some shit.
That's just some priceless...
He probably had to tangle with some of those gremlins.
Priceless character acting when you have Hoyt Axton and him acting off, Hoyt Axton coming in like, hey, let me tell you, buddy, blah, 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 and him just being... completely, inured to it is just, it's just wonderful.
Oh, and he's got, I love Hoyt Axton's line. He goes, you got a really bad case of dragon breath, or bad breath.
Yeah, yeah.
So racially insensitive.
And his grandson is basically Short Round, pretty much.
I thought it was Short Round.
Yeah. It's not, though. I checked the IMDb. It's not the same kid who played Short Round. He was actually the kid who played Short Round. Wasn't he in Goonies
as
well?
He was in Goonies too.
Yes, am I thinking?
But yeah, he's got the same outfit. He's got the same ball cap and the same. Just he's about the same age. It's hilarious.
Apparently, all Asian kids in the 80s just dressed like that.
In Spielberg movies, anyway. Spielberg had just one costume set for. In the archives, it said Asian 8 to 10, ball cap and a baseball shirt.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's it.
At least he was around going, holy smoke, hold on to your potatoes.
No time for love, Dr. Jones.
He no nuts. He
crazy.
Wait,
you achieve very big.
Yeah, well, that was, he was the Americanized character. That's why he didn't understand.
Oh, yeah.
That's why he didn't understand that he shouldn't sell the Mogwai for $100.
Oh, jeez, $100.
God, how many Mogwai would I have if they were only $100, man?
You need the one, though.
Yeah, you just pour the water on them.
Yeah, but you don't want that. No, yeah.
Yeah, because they all turn out evil. Like that spit big old loogies on your original Mogwai.
Yeah, well, you could actually, for a bastard like me, that could actually be a lot of fun. There's a lot of places where I could find them a nice home, you know what I'm saying?
See, that begs the question to me, though, of let's say Gizmo didn't get wet, but Billy fed him after midnight, what would have happened? And would Gizmo have eaten after midnight if he knew it was after midnight?
I don't think he would.
Because even though that scene where he did feed the other gremlins or the other Mogwai, Gizmo was like, nah, I'm not gonna. Because Gizmo knew better.
And I think once you make the second generation of, I think basically probably every generation you make, they probably get worse. you know, off of a gizmo type. But, like, you know, once you make those evil Mogwai, you basically, if you want to not have trouble, you would have to keep them in a sealed box. You know what I mean? Otherwise, they're going to get into water. They're going to get into food. They're going to actively try to make themselves.
Oh, that just made me think of something. Mogwais must smell like shit.
Sure they do.
They can never bathe. What are you going to do?
You get some Febreze.
That only goes so far.
Well, and you know, it's funny, Hiro, bringing up the idea of what would happen if Gizmo had eaten after midnight. In the original script, there is no Stripe.
Yeah.
It's Gizmo that becomes the Stripe. And again, it was Spielberg that overruled that, and it's like, thank God.
Yeah.
You know? This film takes on a whole new type of dimension if Gizmo's not there with the heroes the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, because then,
he wouldn't be able to do my favorite thing in the entire movie, drive a pink Bobby car to save the day. When I was a kid, that, oh my God, it made me die every time he'd get in that car and haul ass out of there. I was just like, this is great. And then the dog's
reaction. That's what I was just
going
to say. That brings us to that dog. That dog's reaction to the gremlins and to Gizmo is, yeah, and they you could tell that dog was skittish around it because they filmed like two or three scenes where that dog would be, like, walking along, and then all of a sudden it would be like, holy shit, what the... You know, it would literally jump to the side and be just like, Jesus Christ, there's that thing in the car again. But when, like, when the dog is meeting meeting Gizmo for the first time and stuff, that's some great dog acting, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It must be the combination of the puppet acting and the dog acting for the dog to react to the puppet, like... Because a dog, I mean, like a little kid will react to a puppet better than a dog, because to a dog, a puppet probably smells like, you know, polyurethane foam and glue and, you know, gears from the pneumatics in it and stuff. It doesn't smell like a living creature, but that dog reacts like it
looks
does.
Like an animal.
Yeah, it does,
though,
and it moves, you know? Like an animal. And the dog is obviously fascinated by it, but it's great because the dog is not like... You know, grab it by the neck and shake it till it's dead. The dog is like, "Oh, hi, new friend."
Speaking of the dog, those gremlins are
oh
bastards,
my god, that's
they?
So.
Strung them up outside.
I didn't realize how evil that was till the last few times I watch it. And every time I see that scene, I go, "Oh, that's right, man." And they think Deagle did it. They're just like, "Holy shit!"
Yeah.
You know, I would have been like kicking down her.
Let's go kill that.
Oh my
bitch.
God, I would have put my foot so far up her ass if that was my dog. You know, holy shit, hung by the wires.
Yeah. And you know, I love the bit where Gizmo and the dog are sitting under the Christmas tree, and Gizmo's playing with his little trumpet, and the dog's just kind of sitting there with him. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, it gets the thing that obviously the dog was comfortable with the puppet enough, you know, that it wasn't something that was alien. So that's good dog acting.
Yeah.
Again, you know.
Yeah, and I
puppet acting in that is neat too, with all the bad Mogwai playing their video game.
Yeah.
And just sitting there by himself having fun. I love.
I'm a connoisseur of dog acting. This is some of the best dog acting this side of Boy and His Dog.
I would say the dog in The Thing as well, and John Carpenter's The Thing.
God,
that was a
well
good...
a lot of that dog. There was a lot of that. Sometimes with that dog, it was. Well, the one scene where the dog was walking, that was definitely not the dog puppet.
Walking down the hall.
The scene where the dog was walking down the hall was some pretty good dog acting there.
That was Academy Award.
Yes.
Winning.
That was some Nicholson style dog acting.
Hey, I'm going to walk down this hallway.
The dog had to go for like 10 minutes and do some breathing exercises to get character and... He was method style. He got into a space of fear and you know, paranoia and did it.
At this point, am I thinking, am I am the thing or am I still myself?
Maybe I'm
the Jack Nicholson thing,
yeah.
Dog. Oh, jeez.
Which all comes to a head if you watch Wolf.
Oh,
where Jack Nicholson actually plays a dog. So there you go. It all comes full circle, and he's not as good as that dog in The Thing.
I would like at this time that neither the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror nor DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy endorses or supports the film Wolf in any way, shape, or form.
I don't know if even Jack
Nicholson. I thought it was okay.
I was going to say, it's not awful. It's got some fun moments in it. When Jack Nicholson pisses on the guy's shoes, that's pretty.
I mean, it is definitely, you know, it's a late 80s, early 90s Wolf movie.
It's sort of like a less... It's not as good as, say, the remake of Cat People with Nastasha Kinski, because it doesn't have naked Nastasha Kinski running around in it. It's got Jack Nicholson turning into... she don't want to see. But
not the same.
Yeah, not even close. But,
Now, Cat People has Annette O'Toole naked in it. That's why you rent that one.
I haven't seen that in so long.
Yeah.
It's got David Bowie putting out fire.
David Bowie.
With gasoline.
Oh, God. How do we end up at David Bowie?
David Bowie from Gremlins.
How do you
David Bowie was in that movie with all the Muppets.
Yeah,
there you go.
But, you know, another just little throwaway gag Gremlins that I love is the radio DJ.
Oh, yeah, rocking Ricky Rialto.
Another person you think is killed, but later on turns out, well, it's a little tough out here, but rocking Ricky's doing okay.
I'm staying on the air.
And the surprising thing with rockin' Ricky was at the end of the movie, well, maybe not the end of the movie, but as everything is going down in the film, rockin' Ricky's on the radio saying, you know, we're going to turn the hoses on these things. I'm like, no. Don't turn the hoses on that. That's just going to, bone you so hard.
We boned? Yep, we're boned. Say I do just for, again from a point that's serious when talking about getting boned, when Stripe jumps in the pool at the Y.
Oh god!
All the water just starts roiling and smoking and flashing different colors. It's one of those like
run time to run.
And it's such a simple effect with just lighting and probably throwing some dry ice into the water. Yep. But, it is horrifying.
Yep, just threw
if you know
big blocks of dry ice in, that's exactly what they did. And then when from the outside, all they had to do is, like, flash strobe lights to make it look like something. But,
And you know, initially you saw just a couple of drops of water gone on, Gizmo, and it created those five. You can imagine an entire, swimming pool full of water you're going to be dealing with. You know, technically, there should have been billions of those things, but still.
Well, at some point, you probably do hit your mass conversion limit.
I was going to say, because they could jump out of the pool and jump right back in, and then, some of that magic in that old felt hat they found would have to run out.
How did we equate Gremlins with Frosty the Snowman?
It's a Christmas episode. I was just trying to...
Yeah, there's a snowman in the movie, a glass one that breaks. Whatever.
Yeah, screw you, Deagle.
Oh, she's such a bitch.
I love her retort.
Oh, my heart!
I can piss my pants every time she says
What I love is she's a total sweetie pie to all her cats, and she has names for all of them, too.
And they're all money.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love the whole bit with the where she attacks the people outside the bank and how they're hungry and everything, and it's like the standard issue scene from with the heartless old bat from Christmas movie, and in a normal Christmas movie she would get her comeuppance by seeing the true spirit of Christmas, and in this film of course she's locked in the house off. The other thing about that always made me laugh is my mother is an RN. And anytime I would go to her office, they had the chairlift.
Nice.
Man, that would be just so awesome.
There's a turbo setting on
this. I remember when I saw this movie and I found out that I bought the movie tie-in magazine for it and found out that was Polly Holiday. And I was like, oh my God, that was Flo. Wow, she got old. But then when I'm watching it now, I'm like, she's really not that old. You know, she just looked old because I was a lot younger. She's just more just the you know, I saw her as being almost like 70 years old then, but now I'm looking at it going, no, she still pretty much looks like Flo. They just put her into a more like Wicked Witch, Margaret Hamilton sort of outfit. And
straight up Elvira Gulch.
Yeah. Yeah, they
holy crap, I did not know that was Flo. Thank you for pointing that out for me. No one will never be able to watch that movie again.
All right, now, according to the commentary, she actually had a redeeming moment in the movie, and they took it out. She's sitting alone, and she looks at a picture of her dead husband, and she starts to cry, and they're like, humanizes her too much.
Nah, don't
use it. Gotta go.
Yeah, she didn't need any humanization.
No, she didn't. She needed to get killed.
I'm surprised that we didn't get Judge Nelson getting... or Judge Reinhold, I mean. I'm surprised we didn't get more payback with him, because he was the one who really wanted to stick it to Billy, you know.
Well, he ends up locking
the vault. In the bank.
That's true.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I think I remember they dealt with in the Oh, okay. Because I thought that was something they dealt with in the novel as well. So that may be where I'm remembering that from. But yeah, he was the quintessential sort of, you know, 80s yuppie, upwardly mobile person that I just came to hate.
So, didn't we all?
That didn't really exist in reality, but existed in all the 80s movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, they'd always have the best drugs, man. They could afford them. Yeah, because I was doing bumps of coke and fucking 6 years old, right?
We don't know. That
would explain a lot.
It wouldn't explain my figure. Fat people don't do coke. If they are, they get very thin very fast.
Well, you got your Artie Langs and your John Belushis out there, you know?
And then
that's
die.
True.
They don't get thin.
Yeah. I was going to say, fat people do coke. They just do, you know, coke plastic, you know, more so than...
Right.
Any other coke. Classic and double cheeseburgers and cheese fries. You know.
Oh yeah,
I'll take any of those over Coke any day.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
But
just a big bag of confectioner's sugar. Just lick it.
I had a friend in high school who was a football player. His whole family was athletic, and he and his brother, after a day of school, would go home and they'd mix up confectionery sugar and water and food coloring and eat it with spoons.
I mean, yeah, it's a simple frosting, but
yeah, it's about the most simple frosting.
No,
it's just the most simple delivery. It's, you know, you add the water to it because you can't just eat dry confectionery sugar because it'll cook.
Yes, you can.
Not fast enough. Not fast enough.
That's true.
Mix it with water. What the hell
it's
is
just
your
like
problem?
People
you melt a stick of butter.
Yeah.
You melt a stick of butter and then you pour it in.
They used to take sticks of butter and margarine, and they would roll it in regular, you know, granulated sugar. Just roll it in it and eat it, like a candy.
Okay, let's finish this podcast. I've got a stick of butter downstairs calling my name.
Put some Hershey's chocolate syrup over it.
Ah, deliciousness. And then deep fry it.
Chocolate.
Yeah. All right, you got me back on board with the frying.
Leave it to the guy from Oklahoma to suggest deep frying something.
Of course.
Lina couldn't get to it soon enough was why.
Well, since it seems like we're rounding out the episode, I'm just going to say I did have a computer crash. There was a scheduled Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror that's actually completed, but it's on a hard drive, so it may be a little while of Kill Baby Kill. So that's coming. So that's why this one's sort of in a weird spot. But I have
think of this as our Christmas.
Yes, this is our Christmas episode. We'll get it out before the end of the month. And hopefully it'll just be a good reminder to watch Gremlins every year. Put it on put it in your rotation along with Die Hard you put up a what do you call it? A poll.
I did a Facebook poll of favorite Christmas
and
movie.
I definitely
quotations.
Voted for Gremlins.
Yeah, you got Gremlins, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, First Blood. You know, there's some other ones too. I should have probably put Home Alone on there too.
So you got, so you listeners, you have a,
because that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, yeah. You have a year, listeners, to for any suggestions for horror movies for next year's.
Well, Revolt at Christmas. Some point, Silent Night.
Yeah.
Punish.
Oh yeah.
Punish.
And Christmas Eve is the scariest damn night of the year.
I just, you just posted that clip, and I just watched it yesterday. That old man is I love the way love the way when mom and dad walk in, he just turns his head to the side and goes blank again. It's,
you see Santa Claus, you run, boy,
run for your life.
You run for your life.
No, I have to say though, my favorite moment from any Silent Night, Deadly Night film is in Silent Night. No, no, not even two. It's in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3, where the killer who has a clear plastic dome on his head so that you can see his brain, okay, and is wearing a hospital gown, hails a cab, gets in the cab. The cabbie turns and goes, "Hey, buddy, you okay?"
Oh, of course, it has to be to that point by Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. It can't be. It can't be any other way.
You know, there was a pecking order amongst horror movie franchises in the 80s. This one was towards the bottom.
Yeah. Well,
it wasn't even at the bottom. It was.
I remember when this one came out. This one made Roger Ebert almost puke. He almost like flipped out when that movie came out. So that would be a fun one for next year. But I'm sure. I'm sure there's others that I just haven't thought of yet.
Let's do quality the first year for the Vault Christmas special, and then we can drop down to Silent Night, Deadly Night, you know, later on.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you haven't seen Gremlins, why not? And if you haven't seen it recently, go see it.
And then go get Gremlins 2.
I was just going to say, just go get Gremlins and Gremlins 2 and watch them back to back, and you'll have a riot, and it'll probably take up less time than watching one Peter Jackson movie.
Yeah, and your kids will like them.
And
if you want to get your kids started in horror movies, start with Gremlins.
Gremlins is a good movie to traumatize your kids with. If you're going to traumatize them at a young age with horror movies, with something horrific, it's best to use those 80s pre-PG-13s like Gremlins, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Poltergeist.
Yeah, because there's nothing scarier than thinking that your Furby is going to come to life at night.
Exactly. And you can scare them, but like, you know, mom, who's usually the spoil sport with that sort of stuff, could still walk in on Gremlins and be like, "Oh, cute," you know.
"Oh, cute, there's a gremlin taking his clothes off and flashing a young girl."
Yeah, it all depends on what second she chooses to walk in. But they usually walk in early, you know. They usually check up on the movie early on, so in you know, so they can nip it in the bud. So early on, there's nothing really to. It's just like, oh, what fun.
For about 20
minutes.
What good
fun, yeah. And then she could go back and work on the Christmas cookies while the kids have the seeds of future nightmares planted.
They're going to be the ones doing whatever the version, whatever a podcast is in 20 years. They'll be us, you know. So
yeah, we need those traumatized kids to make the horror, to be traumatized and work it out in their horror movies in the future that we can watch and talk about podcast. Yeah.
Let us traumatize you and kids.
Exactly.
But, and the fact that you said that like a Kennedy just made me really laugh.
Let us traumatize your children.
It's better than as Michael Jackson, I guess.
And we are
It's
out.
The Corey Feldman connection.
Stop!
The night wind to the little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
Way up in the sky, little lamb. Do you you see what I see? A star, dancing.
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today. Anytime you plan to visit Amazon.com, please be aware that if you use the Amazon.com link located on our website, www.twotruefreaks.libsyn.com, Two True Freaks will receive a referral bonus for any items you purchase. There is absolutely no additional cost to you whatsoever for doing this. All proceeds go directly toward keeping new episodes of all your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated podcasts rolling, and it really helps us out. So please, use our Amazon.com link anytime you plan to visit Amazon.com.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.libsyn.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O-T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S. Libsyn is spelled L-I-B-S-Y-N.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook too. My name is spelled S-C-O-T-T-G-A-R-D-N-E-R.
You can friend me on Facebook too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
When it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. When the truth is found, I hope it will be true to you. All I'm saying is have a nice day. Hope it doesn't rain on your parade. And when it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. When I woke up this morning, I fell out of my bed. I burned my toast and coffee and bumped my aching head. The radio was playing, but it was so hard to hear the words that they were saying with my elbow in my ear. When it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. When the truth is found, I hope it will be true to you. All I'm saying is have a nice day. I hope it doesn't rain on your parade. And when it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. Bible said, and I am fairly certain
He had himself a heavy head. He scared the lion people so bad they hung him dead. And they never even listened to what he really said. He said, when it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. When the truth is found, I hope it will be true to you. All I'm saying is have a nice day. I hope it doesn't rain on your parade. And when it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you. When it all comes down, I hope it doesn't land on you.